Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM. 560thesource.com and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, apparently we're back to being fall today because yesterday it was winter and now we're going back to fall and erasing the evidence of it being winter and snowy yesterday. But, you know, it is November and it is Colorado, so what can you do? I thought I'd talk today about how to not work with an estate planning attorney. You know, there's lots of lists out there of, oh, here's the top things you should know about estate planning. Here's the top things you have to do. So I've got a list of things you should not do. So number one, the easiest way to not work with an estate planning attorney is to not call one. So if you don't want to work with me, don't call. It's very simple. I probably won't even know you exist. That's cool. I'm okay with that. I'd prefer that everybody have an estate plan, but if you don't want to work with me, I totally understand. It's all right. Not everybody wants to work with me. But if you can't manage to do that and you do call an estate planning attorney and you do want to work with one, here's the best ways to really upset them or to not work well with them. So, you know, I tend to think that I get along with most people fairly well. Now, when people talk to me and they're like, oh, he's really a nice guy, I will deny that. I'm really mean and ornery and very, you know, angry and bitter and nobody wants to work with me. But I guess, you know, I have some people fooled. What can I say? But, you know, I have a lot of people, you know, many people, you know, when I do different events or I talk to people and they're like, well, how should I pick an attorney? And I'm like, well, pick one that you like, pick one that you're going to work well with, pick one that you get along with. Because if you don't, you know, just like most of you, I feel like I'm stating the obvious again. If you don't like somebody you're working with, you're not going to work well together. You know, this is, you know, seems like it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it. So now it goes with saying instead of without saying. Is that an expression? I don't even know. Anyhow, so here's a few ways you can do. So one of the quickest ways that people can get, you know, that you can really annoy an estate planning attorney is you can ask them to make decisions for you. Be like, well, what should I do? Isn't this, you know, what's best? What do you think? What would you do? What do you think I should do? And I'm like, well, I'm not in the business of telling you what you should do. I'm in the business of listening to what you think you want, understanding what it is, what your goals and objectives are, and then giving you the information so that you can make your own decisions. So if you're somebody who doesn't like to make your own decisions, if you're someone who doesn't want to take responsibility for your own decisions and wants to put it all on me, we may not play well together. Now, I think that, you know, there's a couple of reasons. It's not that people are like, well, hey, I don't want to make any decisions for myself. I want somebody else to run my life. That's what I want. Somebody else tell me what to do. Now, for those of you who know people and, you know, other human beings, it's amazing how many people, they don't say those words outright, but they really do think it. Oh, tell me what to do. I need to do it. I need direction. I need to be told how I should act and how I should feel and how I should do all these things. Those of us who think for ourselves, we don't really do that in most phases of life, but it's amazing how quickly when people jump into the law, they seem to think that, you know, well, you're the attorney, you know what to do, you tell me what to do. Well, and I think some people believe that the law is, there's just some sort of checklist where you're like, oh, okay, well, we've got situation 103.6CD subsection S, exception Q, and that's the rule that applies. So what is that rule? And I go, not sure that I'm familiar with that rule. Why don't you go ahead and, you know, tell me what that rule is? But as if there's somehow, you know, there's like this big laundry list of things that are supposed to happen. And if you have one situation, you can always fit everything into that situation, know exactly what's going to happen. That's not quite how it works. I mean, I was listening to a radio station, I think it was Hannity on the Law the other day, and someone's like, oh, you know, we have a situation with fraud going on. And the guy says, well, so what statute was violated? And he's like, 26 U.S.C. 115 subsection E. And the radio host says, yeah, I'm familiar with subsection A, B, and C, but not really E. Could you please tell me what it says? Because, you know, the concept that the law is this big laundry list and, you know, that there's a specific rule that applies to a specific situation at all times and that, you know, there's no wiggle room and that everything's all set in stone. That to me seems to be a misunderstanding that people have, that there's, you know, that's not how it works. There's kind of general principles. And, you know, I mean, I was talking with somebody last night and they're like, oh, well, what can we do? Because in their situation, they have, I wrote a trust several years ago for a joint trust for mom and dad. And then dad passed away. And now mom, and then there's three kids involved. Two of the kids are good. One of them has some psychological issues. And so the one with the psychological issues is starting to convince mom that mom needs to give her all the money now while mom's still alive. And mom is starting to have dementia, starting to have memory loss. But we're not entirely sure if she's at a point where it's to a level that we can remove her ability to make her own decisions. So we had a discussion about how we really need to get an outside objective observer like a doctor to administer a cognitive function test so that we can get an idea of what the cognitive function is of the mom so that we know what to do. And you know, we're understanding that with this cognitive function test, most likely, no matter what we do, the sister who has the mental issues is not going to be okay with it, so she's going to want to challenge it. And so we're in an interesting situation where we're like, well, you know, it's probably not a good idea to let sister take advantage of mom. It's probably not a good idea to let sister pull all of the money from mom that could be used for, you know, mom's care, and we don't want to bleed mom dry, you know. And, you know, the sister who's doing this is not the named power of attorney. She's not the named successor trustee. She's not the named personal representative. But instead, she's just kind of got the ear of mom. And since mom is still able to make her own decisions, mom is, you know, making decisions that many people, including I and the other two sisters, would describe as questionable. And it's very sad. It's very hard to have people go through situations like that, especially when they're able to make their own decisions, because people are allowed to make bad decisions. You know, as much as we, you know, I mean, as much as we'd like for everybody to make good decisions, people do make bad decisions. And when they make bad decisions, those are the hardest decisions to accept, because you don't want to see anybody make a bad decision. You don't want to see anybody, you know, be hurt or suffering. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, and 1220 AM, online at 560thesource.com and on the TuneIn app. So, I mean, I was actually having that conversation with my clients last night about how when people make bad decisions or stupid decisions, they're allowed to do so. You know, I've seen people make some colossally bad decisions. I've seen videos of people who are trying to race a train across the tracks and their cars get smashed. Not the best decision. I've seen people who've decided that dropping out of school because they thought they were smarter than the professors would be a good decision. Usually that's not the best decision. You know, not always. Sometimes being in a college class or being in college isn't necessarily the way that things go. I mean, you know, I have a friend who he, as his second career, he went and became a certified master plumber. So he's a plumber now, and he owns a plumbing business. And I think he makes, you know, triple or quadruple the money that I do being a plumber. And you know what? And he loves it. It wasn't his first thing that he did. But there's not a college major for plumbers. You know, he's not, oh, hey, you want to be a plumber? Well, come to our plumber college and we'll go through and teach you all of the ins and outs of being a plumber. You know, plumbers, I think there's a, I think there's probably courses you can take and there's training you can get. There's apprenticeships and things like that. But it's not necessarily a degree that will, it's not necessarily a profession where you have to have a plumbing degree from an accredited plumbing college. You know, I think of, you know, someone saying, oh, well, you know, did you go to a clown college to become a clown? You know, as if somehow there's, you know, higher education classes for clowns. Now, to be an attorney, I had to go to law school. To go to law school, I had to go to college. It's just the way that it worked for me. And so, you know, that's what you do. But in all of those, you can make, you know, when people make bad decisions, I mean, I put it this way. There's a constitutional right to make bad decisions. It's called the First Amendment. You know, if you have a good idea, or if you have a good, if you make good decisions, no one cares. You know, if you have a really great idea, people are like, yeah, we love that idea. Let's do that. If you have a really stupid, dumb, bad idea, that's what the First Amendment is for, is to protect that bad idea and protect the person who says the bad idea or has the stupid idea and not punish them just for having the idea. Now, if they decide to act on the idea and they decide to do something stupid, that's why we have laws. That's why we have, you know, natural consequences of things. I have a friend who he was ranting and raving about the evils of, you know, behavioral characteristics and, you know, oh, and, you know, if you're like this, you ought to be, you know, you ought to lose your job and you should, you know, if you're going to, you know, just accuse people of things that they haven't done, then you deserve to lose your job because you have no sort of concept of how things are supposed to go. And so he's, you know, ranting and raving about people who do stuff like this. And then just a couple of weeks ago, during the whole Facebook and Twitter Me Too, you know, hashtag Me Too campaign, he's like, he used to write movie reviews for a website. So he says, oh, I can no longer be associated with website because, you know, I found out something and this horrible thing happened. And, you know, so I shouldn't be involved with them at all. They're a terrible, horrible organization. And, you know, we can't support this and so on and so forth. He just went off on one of the rants. I just kind of sat there and looked at it and I thought, let's let the natural consequences of this play themselves out. So about 3 days later, he posts a whole long thing of, oh, I apologize. In my zeal to protect this person, I overreacted and I threw everybody in one category and I threw everybody, you know, threw them all under the bus. And, you know, I apologize. And then he named specific people and he says, and to all of you friends who have unfriended me and won't talk to me again, I apologize to you. Hopefully this will make its way back to you. And I remember reading it and thinking, huh, how interesting that you rant and rave about people who do what you just did. And then there are negative consequences. That's weird. How did that work? All right. Well, there is that. So, you know, sometimes the natural consequences of bad decisions play themselves out. We don't need to shout them down. You know, First Amendment is supposed to be about the free exchange of ideas. Now, I realize that there will be people out there who say, oh, well, you know, the First Amendment isn't complete and total. I'm like, I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying that you have the constitutional right to make bad decisions. And we don't, you know, in the law, we don't want to take that away from you. So, you know, you want to be able to make your own decisions. And if you don't want to make your own decisions, we're probably not going to work well together. Now, lots of people think that there's only one way to do things. Then that laundry list, they're like, oh, I mean, I've had people come up to me and be like, well, where can I get the will form? I'm like, the will form. And I guess there's this idea out there that somehow Colorado has a specific form that a will must be in, otherwise it's not going to work. Well, that's not quite how it goes. But hey, you know, if we want to say that, then maybe we can. But I don't think that's exactly how it goes. And so, you know, there's more than one way to do things. And if people misunderstand that there's more than one way to do things, that's might be why they ask me to make decisions for them, because they think that I know the one right way. So I usually turn that around and say, you know what, there's really not one right way. You know, let's think about and let's talk about what you think you want to accomplish. And then once we figure that out, we can set up your estate plan that will accomplish your goals and objectives and what you want to do, because there's not just one way to do it. So the other thing that I really love, and it's so much fun when people do it, and please note the sarcasm there. People will be like, "Oh, well, I heard that, insert your thing here." Or my brother-in-law said that, or, you know, I did a little research on Google that said this. I'm like, "Oh, okay." I had a client several years ago who we were trying to protect his mom's assets from Medicaid. And he said, "Well, you know, would a life estate work?" And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" He says, "Well, you know, if we were to transfer ownership to somebody but reserve a life estate to mom, then mom would be able to live there for the rest of her life, but it wouldn't be her asset." I'm like, "Really? Why not? It's her asset during her life, so it's a life estate. It may not be worth the full value, but there's still a life estate asset there. So I'm not quite sure how that would work, because she still has access to the asset. She still has the ability to use the asset. She still has, you know, if there's money that's made by the asset, she still has access to it. So Medicaid is going to say that's still her asset." And he paused. He looked at me like, "Huh, yeah, I guess I didn't think of it that way." And, you know, he had done a little bit of research on Google and, you know, heard and seen the term life estate. And because he'd seen the term life estate and he knew it could be used in some sort of estate planning situations, he was all excited that he could ask me about it and thought that it would work. Now, I tried to let him down easy and saying, "You know what, it's a good idea. It just doesn't apply in your fact situation, so we need to do something different." And he goes, "Oh, okay, that makes sense, I guess." But, I mean, I think the worst example I've ever prior to doing estate planning full-time, I did some tax resolution work. And I have people all the time who are like, "Oh, well, my brother-in-law said that if I just put everything in a corporation, then I can deduct everything, and then I don't have to pay taxes at all." I said, "Okay, that's probably not quite how it works, because corporations pay taxes, and you can't just avoid tax by dumping everything into a corporation." And then this person said, "Well, why would my brother-in-law have said that then? Are you calling him a liar?" I'm like, "No, I'm not. I don't know anything about that. I don't know exactly what your brother-in-law may or may not have said. I'm not sure where they're getting their information. All I can tell you is that my understanding of the law is that you can't just do that." Now, sure, that's in a tax situation, but I've also had people like, "Oh, well, you know, I want to make sure that my kids can't get any money from my trust until they're married to a nice Catholic girl." I'm like, "Well, now we're in trouble, because there are certain things you can't do. You can't force somebody to get married. You can't force somebody to have a certain religion. You know, there are certain things that just don't work." So I'm like, "All right, well, maybe we don't want to do that." So if you want me to explain why somebody else may have said something to you and why they may or may not have been thinking it, I have to tell you, I'm an attorney. I'm not a mind reader. And so if you want a mind reader, we're probably not going to work well together. So far we've learned that if you want me to make decisions for you, or you want me to tell you the one best way, or you want me to read your mind, we might be in trouble. And I think those are fair things. You know, maybe they're not. Maybe I'm completely off my rocker, which, you know, can happen. But I think those are decently fair things. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. So, you know, what else? And sometimes you sit down and we'll sit down and I'll start asking questions. But, you know, some people will jump in and be like, "Oh, well, I have a question. I need to know about this. Well, I have a question. I need to know about this." And I'm like, "Okay, hold on just a second. Let me see if I can lay a little bit of groundwork. And if I can lay a little bit of groundwork, then my answer to your question will make a lot more sense." Just because sometimes we have, sometimes in order to answer a question, you need to have foundational answers and foundational understandings. So I'll borrow an example from math. I used to, you know, when I was in college, I double majored in American Studies and Economics. And so my economics classes, especially my macroeconomic classes, they were all multivariable calculus and matrices calculus. And usually I understood the higher level concepts of that. And so I'd be like, okay, well, you know, we have to set up a matrices. We've got five different variables. We need five different equations so that we can solve for the five. Just for those who, you know, quick review of math. If you're trying to solve for a variable, you need the same number of equations as you have variables to be able to solve them. It's just the way that it goes. So we'd set up a 5x5 matrix that we would then solve. And so you'd set it up. You have the different variables. You're trying to solve for the variables. And so you had the variables and this high-level calculus. So, and then you're trying to solve the equations. So in solve for the equations, you needed to use the algebra. Now, algebra is a class that you take long before you get to calculus. It builds on itself. That's how math works. Algebra is usually composed of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. So you need to start, you know, you start from addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. You can move your way up to algebra, trigonometry, calculus, and so on and so forth. Well, if you ask me a question that's a calculus question and you don't understand algebra or addition and subtraction, multiplication and division, it's hard for me to answer your calculus question. In order to answer your calculus question, we have to go back and start with addition, subtraction, multiplication and division. And so sometimes that's what I'm doing in law terms is I'm like, okay, you just asked me a calculus question. And so if I just try to answer the calculus question, you're going to get lost. So I get to explain the algebra behind it. And if you don't understand the algebra behind it, then I get to explain the basic math concepts of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Now, in a math sense, most people understand multiplication, addition, subtraction, and division. Not everybody. This last summer, I was at a garage sale, and I purchased something that was $3.50 and something that was $2 and something that was $1.50. And I handed the lady a 20, and she just kind of looked at me. I said, it's $7 total. She still kind of looked at me. I said, that means I need $13 in change. She said, oh, okay, and she got me money. But, you know, that the for whatever reason, adding up the cost of the items I was buying, then subtracting that out of the $20 bill that I'd given her, you know, it was just, for whatever reason, it was a foreign concept to her. She didn't understand the concept that I was getting at, and so it was hard to answer the question. Now, so I walked her through the math by saying, okay, you add these three, you get 7, 20 minus 7 is 13, that's what I need back. Oh, okay. Fortunately, she could count to 13 in the money that she could give me as the change, so that was good. But if you don't, so there's lots of legal concepts like that. There are lots of legal words and, you know, sometimes I'll be talking and I'll use a legal term and the people kind of look at me like I'm speaking a different language, which sometimes speaking the language of law is a different language. And so I have to stop and say like, okay, hold on. Let me go back. Let me see if maybe I can, you know, discuss this with you and maybe I can, you know, figure this out and I can not use confusing terms that are lawyer type words that I use so that I can not screw you up. You know, it seems like a good idea to not screw people up and to do things properly. So because of that, you know, so sometimes I have to go back and I have to, you know, talk to people and I have to, you know, so we're explaining concepts. And sometimes I have clients who are very mad at me that I don't just answer their question. I'm like, well, we kind of have to lay the groundwork. We have to understand basic concepts that build on each other to get to answering the questions. So if you insist that I have to answer the question, and if you insist that I have to answer the question the way that you want me to, at the exact moment that you want me to, or something like that, then we may not work all that well together. I'm not trying to avoid your question. I'm just trying to answer the question in a way that will make sense to you by the time I finish answering it. So in addition to English, I speak Russian. I spent 2 years as a missionary in Russia, so I speak Russian. So if somebody asks me a question of, oh, well, how do you know, how do you know who somebody is talking about in Russian if they don't use, because in Russian, so Russian has case endings. So the end of a word will change based on what case it's in. And, you know, if you don't understand what a case is, then it doesn't, then that explanation doesn't make any sense. So, you know, if you're saying, I'm walking, you can say, Я ходу. You know, so I'm walking. Okay. So he is walking. Он ходит. So the, instead of the у, there's an, a yet at the end of it. But, you know, some people may not understand what cases are because in English we do have cases. We have a nominative case and a prepositional case and a genitive case and a, you know, but we use prepositions all the time. Instead of using prepositions, Russians use word endings. That's how it works. Well, if you're asking me a question about Russian and then you're wondering why I'm not telling you what the preposition is for, you know, what do you mean the genitive case? I'm like, well, it's genitive case in English is of something. So, you know, I'm full of joy. Of joy is in the genitive case. Well, in Russian, you don't use the word of. There's not an of. There's a case ending. There's an ending to a word that doesn't, that applies. So if we're speaking about something in the law that doesn't quite make sense to you because you're not familiar with the law, I have to explain, you know, the, you know, laying the groundwork of the law before we can understand and answer a question. So if you're going to get mad at me that I don't jump straight to the answer of a question, or if you're going to get mad at me that the answer of my, that my answer to your question contains a lot of legal words and things like that, we may not work well together. If you don't fall into that category and you'd like to learn about estate planning and you'd like to learn what it is and, you know, how I can help you, give me a call. Phone number is 720-394-6887. So thanks for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey. John Rush and Rush Reason are up next. Thanks and bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.